1 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We are live up in St. Joe. Final day for us up here at Chiefs training camp. Final padded practice. We'll get back into some Chiefs football here in just a bit. You'll also hear our conversation with former Chiefs wide receiver Danen Hughes. He stopped by after practice today. His reaction to what we saw again from Cyrus Allen, who once again made a spectacular catch today, this time in one-on-one. Matched up against Mansoor Delaney. It was actually pretty good coverage, too. Just another day where Cyrus Allen continues to get fans excited for this upcoming season. That's coming up around 1:35 or so. Reminder, our training camp coverage is presented by Yuengling Flight. Football season starts here. Reach for Yuengling Flight, the next generation of light beer. Enjoy responsibly. Let's pivot over to the Royals in the stadium. If you've been paying any attention this week, you know it's been a very interesting week in KCMO when it comes to the Royal Stadium. There's been some tension maybe at some of these meetings yesterday, to say the least, and to get a little bit more of an understanding on what is going on and what could happen later on this week, we go out to the Golden Oak Lending phone line and welcome in Councilman Wes Rogers, representing the 2nd District there in Kansas City. Wes, it's great to have you on the show again to talk a little bit more about this project, and let's just start with where we're at now, right? This advanced out of the City Council's Finance Committee, and there's a vote potentially scheduled for tomorrow. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the Finance Committee was really the biggest vote. Passed out of that committee 5-0. Now it goes to the full council tomorrow. We have every reason to believe we've got full support, so I expect to have good news tomorrow, too.
When you look at, I guess, how this process is, how do you think that this works compared to any other project that's been approved by the council? Does it seem business as usual? Does it feel faster than usual? I guess, how does this work compared to other things you guys have gone through the approval process on?
I mean, we've been working on this project for years already, and there's still a long way to go. So I would say this is a massive generational investment. We need to take the time to get it right, and I think we're doing that. And even after the vote tomorrow, and I anticipate it'll pass, there's still a lot of documents to be signed. There's still a lot of work to be done. So this is the biggest step by far, but it's not the only step.
The council, it sounds like, is set to approve this $1.9 billion project. What's the biggest question that maybe even you still have about this project, whether it's the financing mechanisms, whether it's overall the timeline, specifics with the sales tax and the TIF district? What's the biggest question you still have?
So the way we've got it set up, it's 40% private investment, 30% from the city, and 30% investment from other public entities. And so our 30% is pretty clear what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. I think, to me, the biggest question is, can we get this thing done in time for baseball in 2030?
When you look at, I guess, some of the opposition you guys would get, saying that maybe part of this council approval or going through this stuff is an effort to avoid the petition signing stuff, what do you make of that, or what would you say to those that, if that's the way it looks from the outside to some?
You know, that's their opinion, I guess. My focus is on making sure we've got a really good economic development project that we can go explain to the voters and why we're so excited to get this done. I will tell you, this is a good project. I'm happy to defend how good a project it will be, and it's a better project if we start playing baseball in 2030 than if we start playing in 2031. So my goal is to get a really good project done and not slow it down. Just let's do our diligence, get it done right, and get to building.
What are some of the big reasons? If you had to give someone two or three reasons why you think this project's great for the city, a good investment for the city, what would you say?
So I'll tell you one thing that gets brought up all the time is these economic studies about public finance stadiums. One of the biggest reasons that some of these stadium deals don't work is because of what's called the substitution effect. So if somebody's going to ball game, otherwise they'd be going to the movies, or they'd be going to play golf or whatever they're going to do. Royal Stadium is the only stadium in all of Major League Baseball where at any given time most of the fans there from a state is going to be a good deal for the city.
We're talking to Councilman Wes Rogers. He represents the 2nd District. He joins us here on 96.5 The Fan. We're getting the latest on what is going on in Kansas City, Missouri as it pertains to the Royals ballpark proposal that advanced through the City Council's Finance Committee yesterday, and a final vote is expected, or at least the full City Council is expected to consider the ordinance tomorrow. We were discussing earlier in the show, we go back a couple of years, and obviously the failed vote in Jackson County that had the Royals and the Chiefs on the same ballot, and there's a lot of reasons why that thing failed. But it's hard not to look at the financial elements to this proposal compared to that. And I know a couple of years has transpired, and not say, man, that that was a better deal for the taxpayer then than what this deal is.
So it depends on how you look at it, right? So the last time around, the state of Missouri is putting nothing in. This time they're putting in a pretty good chunk of the money, which is great. So locally, that's a win for us. Second part is we're going to draw a boundary around the stadium, and the tax money that's going to pay for the stadium is from people who come to that taxing jurisdiction and spend money. So it's not a sales tax where everybody is spending money on this, whether they're there or not. Also, this is Kansas City versus the county, so the geography is different. So I would say from the city's perspective, we listened to the voters. We got a better deal this time around because of the way that the bonding gets done.
What do you like about this location itself versus, like, you know, maybe the couple of others that got floated and one that actually got voted on? What do you like about this location?
So I took some heat because I will admit I did like the Crossroads site. And when I first heard about the Crown Center site, I was a little skeptical of it. And then you see the renderings, you realize, holy cow, this is actually this is probably the best site we could have come up with. For one, you know, Crown Center is an iconic part of our city, but it's not getting any newer. I guarantee you the city would have incentivized redevelopment there at some point anyway. So we might as well get two great Kansas City icons like the Royals and Hallmark together and do one project instead of two. It doesn't displace hardly any small business there. It's right on the streetcar line. It's already an entertainment area. There's a lot to like about this site.
Councilman Wes Rogers, representing the 2nd District, kind enough to give us some time today. I'm sure we'll check in with you as we get further along in this process, but again, a big vote coming up tomorrow as well. We appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, of course. Happy to talk anytime.
There you go. Wes Rogers with us here on 96.5 The Fan, as he laid out there kind of the timeline where we're at. It's out of committee, so tomorrow the expectation is that the proposal will go before the full city council. They'll consider, he said he expects it to pass. I think that's the general consensus as well, is that it will pass. And then there's still a ton more moving forward. I do think the interesting thing, and yes, the state money aspect is different on this proposal versus the Jackson County vote that failed multiple years ago. There was no state money. But I still think the overall, I guess if you're John Sherman, to me, he's getting a better deal now than what he would have got back on that vote. Now, maybe you could argue the city is getting more help than they would have, and therefore versus the county vote. But John Sherman as an owner is going to get one of the larger subsidies for a stadium in the history of baseball.
Yeah,
yes,
and we know that Clark got it for
the
football.
I understand.
Sure,
councilman is talking about Kansas City, Missouri. There is a ton of state money that is involved in this project as well.
But I live in Missouri, so I got to pay some of that too. You know, maybe not in full freight, or if you're a Missouri resident, you're not just off the hook if you live in the city and you're paying those taxes. Now, look, it is like a star bond, and it's like you got to go down to that area in order to, you know, be spending that cash, which is a fair way to look at it most of the time. And so, I'm not here complaining about it, but at the same time, it's just there's a lot of different ways. I want a downtown baseball. This is near downtown baseball. So, those things, you know. They'll certainly give you a chance.
I'm excited about it. I think there's still some more questions moving forward, but this has been something that everybody's been talking about in the city for 6 or 7 years at this point in time, and now it feels like we at least are closer than ever to seeing that actually happen.
Yeah.
The expectations again will pass. I have to bring up the text line, though, because as we were talking to Councilman Wes Rogers, I should have asked him. Maybe next time we have him on. I didn't know if he's got this before. We must have 15 different texts saying that this is Patrick Mahomes talking. They think he sounded a little bit like Mahomes at times.
I don't know. I didn't hear.
They think he sounded a little like Patrick Mahomes.
Interesting.
Is it just me from the 785, or does he sound like Mahomes? Someone says Mahomes is taking the minority ownership of the Royals to heart. He's out here. He's out here as a councilman.
I didn't hear it. I guess maybe though.
I'd have to go back and listen.
I just had to hear Patrick Mahomes talk so much in my life. Maybe I just couldn't hear it.
But it wasn't just one. The reason I brought
it
up, it was not just one or two people texting that in.
Yeah.
I'll have to ask him next time we have him on the show if he gets that ever. I'd have to go back and listen to see if I heard. I don't know, Drew, did you hear it at all? I really didn't sense that.
I don't know. Let me play this back. Does this sound like Patrick Mahomes at all to you guys?
So the way we've got it set up, it's 40% private investment, 30% from the city.
It doesn't sound.
A half second on one
there's
inflection.
There's a touch of maybe a little bit of that nasally sound.
Yeah.
But it's not Mahomes. Mahomes is much gravelier.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Because I'm like you guys, I didn't think
someone,
that. I didn't
know. Oh, now more people are texting in and said, see, I thought that too. Now we're getting even more.
I'm sure we'll be happy to hear that.
Is he cloudy? There's a couple of texts around.
By the way,
he's cloudy as well.
Yeah. Well, look, if you think that sounds like Patrick Mahomes, then I guess Patrick Mahomes is running for mayor, because I believe Wes Rogers is also running for mayor of KC.
Right. Is he?
I believe, according to his Twitter account.
Is Mayor Lucas done?
Well, he's term limited.
Oh, he is term limited. Is he done? Is he on the last term? He is in the last term, isn't he? When's the mayoral race up for Kansas City?
No politics on this show, Cody.
Let's ask when the mayoral race.
No politics.
I didn't give any opinions.
No, his Twitter account says candidate for mayor of Kansas City.
2027.
Yeah.
That's when it is.
There you go. There you go, man.
I was just asking. I can't vote for the Kansas City mayor anyway. I live in Gladstone.
That is true.
So,
are you going to run for mayor of Gladstone?
No, I don't think so. Do you think I could win?
No.
Why? I'd have a radio show. In order, I have a pulpit. You know, I can stand up here.
That's
and,
crazy. I don't. You have no political background.
Drew, this is 2026.
Never mind.
This is in 1977. I don't have to have any political background to beat Mayor Gene Moore.
As soon as I said it, I realized that we need to just get to camp questions.
Yeah, we've kind of thrown that out the window now, haven't we? All right, let's please get to save us camp questions.
Camp questions.
I will not be asking you. I will be transitioning to a
how
full
many political
sports,
questions?
All sports.
Oh, okay.
Questions. There's only two of them.
Do you think Andy
you.
Can win mayor?
Yes.
Absolutely.
If Andy ran for mayor in 2027, I'm done with football.
Yes.
I want to get into politics. This is my camp question. I'm the mayor. I want to be the mayor now. Do you think he'd win?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I do too.
Anyway.
All right. So one thing you guys are going to hear from Dane in here in a little bit, something I wanted to ask you for when we had him on. He mentioned Cyrus Allen and obviously how good he's looked over the course of camp, but more so, and we've touched on this a little bit, he's a different type of wide receiver than, you know, Rashee has shown, Xavier Worthy has shown, and the other guys as well. How much do you think that's actually needed within this offense that previously has had so much success, but having another guy that can be a difference maker in a different way might actually help extend the reach of what this offense could be?
Desperately need a person with his skill set, genuinely. And again, none of us proclaim to be experts on the matter. The single best thing I would say about Cyrus Allen regularly is that he gets open. He said it is his pet peeve to not get open.
Yeah, I love that.
He wins at the line of scrimmage. He is good in his release off of the line. He's quick. I'm not calling him Devontae Adams, but that's like what makes Devontae Adams great, right? He's the best maybe release guy in the entire NFL.
Yeah, he's got good feet. Yeah.
Allen is the best release guy on this team. He might not be the best guy in the NFL or might even be top 50 in the NFL. He is the best guy at the line of scrimmage getting open on the Chiefs, other than Travis. Okay, hold on. Sorry. A wide receiver.
Fair. Okay.
Travis Kelce's real good at that, so I want to make it clear that I'm not saying better than Travis Kelce.
No, I hear you.
But he is the best wide receiver at it. So, yes, it's important.
I love that quote, though, that you referenced it there. I love the quote from Cyrus. That was after the game, I think, to Sam McDowell, if I'm not mistaken. He said that. Cyrus Allen definitely provides something they just don't have in this wide receiver room. And you need guys to serve different roles, but also in this, we're talking about something that's very important, which is getting separation. That has just been a major problem. But that's also why I still think we have to be cautious with this whole thing, because we're so desperate to find somebody that can do this that we're willing to now just jump and act like everything is solved with him and he's going to just be this immediate star. I think we have to still be prepared that there could be some growing pains in the early going for Cyrus Allen, as great as he has looked at camp.
Yeah, I think that's fair, because we also heard last year all about how much the offense was going to blow up and everything was going to look amazing in the deep game, and we never saw that. So hearing that stuff from camp is, you got to take it with
a grain of salt. I mean, no doubt I am excited that there is at least a possibility that they have found an answer to their problems.
Yeah. Number two for you, the last one. Not exactly what will they look like, but how many people get included in this offense this year? So you look back at some of the wide receivers you had. I think five total players have 400 or more yards last year. Is that a similar number what we're getting? Obviously, we know Kenneth Walker will be involved, but how many guys do you think are truly considered to be involved in the offense. Is Emmett Johnson a part of that, or is he not, at least right now, in your guys' opinion?
And the benchmark is what? You said 500 yards, or what's the benchmark?
If you're, like last year, I think there were five players receiving-wise who had 400 or more yards, and I didn't look at the rushing, but from a running back perspective, how many guys would you say are involved in the offense?
I mean, let's just go through it. Travis, obviously, Rashee Rice, Xavier Worthy, Cyrus Allen, Kenneth Walker. There's five right there. Yep. I think Tyquan Thornton's more involved. There's six.
That's it. That's the end of the line. I would not include Noah Gray.
You wouldn't include DeMarcado.
He used
in there
to be.
Either.
I wouldn't include DeMarcado. I don't think he gets to that number.
I don't think Emmett Johnson will play enough.
I don't think Emmett Johnson will play enough.
Because I think that's where there was some intrigue, at least with behind the question, was do you think that DeMarcado plays enough to be a guy that's considered to be a part of the offense or included in it, where, hey, this guy's a difference maker that they use throughout the season, or he's really not a guy necessarily that they use on a regular basis?
The sleeper answer should be Noah Gray if he was going to have a bounce back year. He actually has been, in previous years, included in this list. He wasn't last year because he stunk, but in the previous 2 years, he was included in this list of guys who actually matter in the offense. He was like a 400-yard, tight end in the matter. So, like, he'd be the sleeper guy, but I'm just down on him. So, I think it's far more likely Cyrus Allen is a member of
that. If you look at in the backfield last year, there were three guys that had 400 or more. Of course, Patrick Mahomes was one of them, but Pacheco barely even got to 450. Kareem was at 611. So, does Emmett Johnson or DeMarcado get to 400? Or do you not think either of them get to 400 rushing?
So.
Okay.
Well, not unless there's an injury.
I don't believe so. Yeah, I think it would take an absence for that to happen. I think they're going to each chip in for.
It's just going to be Ken Walker heavy.
I think so.
Yeah.
Those are our camp questions. I mean, we can talk about Ken Walker for just a minute, Drew. I just
like Emmett Johnson will get on the field, but he's. I think if you're believing that he's just going to get the second most touches out of the backfield, I think we've seen way too much of a track record with rookie running backs with Andy Reid, the trust in also pass protection. That part is so crucial. I know it's not the sexy thing that stands out in preseason because we all just watched Emmett Johnson. The kid can play. There's no doubt about that, and he's got great vision. That was on display. But Patrick Mahomes against the Denver Broncos, if I tell you it's third down, Emmett Johnson is on there. Do the Chiefs trust Emmett Johnson to pick up the blitz?
No.
And I think the answer is no right now.
In week one,
Now it's no. It can't be yes later on, but right now I think the answer is no.
The other part about this is that traditionally the Chiefs don't go into a game day carrying four running backs. So, like, in previous years, one of those four we just mentioned would be inactive on game day.
Yeah, that'll probably
And because Breshard Smith is a special teams player, it is between the rookie and Emmett Johnson or DeMarcado as the inactive player, I would think.
I think DeMarcado's active.
And so
early on in the year, at least, at the very least, early, because, again, he's a very good pass protector.
I don't want to jump to a conclusion, but I would say I think it's fair to say that if Emmett Johnson, let's say, has 15 carries by week 8, they wasted their draft pick on him. They should have never drafted him fourth round. Because
the long game. I'm usually for that in higher round draft picks, not as much for fourth.
Yeah, I know, but with running backs, we see this all the time, Cody, where fourth round running backs start. Chase Brown started immediately for the Bengals. Bucky Irving was immediately a contributor for the Buccaneers. Like, I think that might be a conversation worth having, where did you actually need to even take this guy in the fourth round if you're not using him? Where I do think that it's going to be, just based on what we saw on Saturday, I think it will be hard to keep him off the field because of how effective he can be in the ground game. And I know that you're hoping Kenneth Walker doesn't need to breathe or anything like that, but I think for what he showed, he had five more broken tackles than any other player in any other preseason game. This is what he does. Like, I think it's just going to be hard to keep him off the field.
Look, I'll admit,
over the course of the season,
I think there's a decent chance. The way DeMarcado's been talked about, the biggest problem with my prediction in this category is he is supposed to be a good pass blocker, so they probably trust him to do it. I think it's equally as likely as DeMarcado's Elijah Mitchell than he is like a big factor in the offense this year, right?
Yeah,
now.
I'm
way off base on him. But just like there's no buzz, I don't watch him play and be like, now they're also protecting him, so they're not playing him, so they're obviously going to keep him on the roster. I just don't know if I don't know how big of an impact he's going to have. Maybe I'm wrong.
A couple people texted and said, "Gold, bad take on the rookie running back under Reed. What about Kareem Hunt and Isaiah Pacheco? Was there a guy named Kenneth Walker already starting?"
Yeah, those are way different for that reason alone.
Isaiah Pacheco, we all thought he should have played earlier. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, until he got hurt, guys. Remember, we were all saying Pacheco needed to play more? Clyde Edwards-Helaire was still playing over Pacheco's rookie year for the first 8 weeks.
It's just tough
of the season.
If you told me Emmett Johnson, last year he's probably the starter by week 7, 6. He is the starting running back for the last year's Chief team. By the way.
Last year's team.
Yeah, 100% he would
start. But it's a very different room.
By week eight this year, Emmett Johnson could be the number two back. But week one, I do not think he's going to out-snap Amari DiMercato. No.
I agree with you about the week one thing. I just get the feeling that he's – I think he's shown enough juice over the course of this game.
Who knows, Rashard Smith last year, though. I'm not even disagreeing with you guys about the eye test. Like, I'm with you. I want him to play. This is not me saying – I want Emmett Johnson to play more. I think the vision is very clear. But we all knew that when he got drafted out of Nebraska. The vision's great. He can break tackles. The big knock was – can you trust him in pass protection? And that may not seem like a big thing to any of us to just watch preseason and see Emmett Johnson when he's got the football in his hands. But it's a big deal for Andy Reid on third downs if his quarterback's going to get blindsided and get knocked out of the game.
If you make me rank right now, total yards at the end of the season, Ken Walker, one. Okay, so we're good there. DiMercato, two. Rashard Smith, three. Emmett Johnson, four.
I think Emmett Johnson should be two, though.
I get your point, Drew. Like, I am active in the – I hate – my least favorite thing on the planet is first or second round picks that are, like, part of the future plan. Like, what? You're a team that is constantly in win now. I hate when we take project players in the first round. They're like, oh, they'll contribute more next year. The worst. Fourth round or later.
Pick 161.
To your point, like, their gold, there I just live my life. It's all a long-term game. Ken Walker's on a three-year deal, which is a two-year deal in the NFL. You know, and if Drew, by the end of the year, he's a contributing member of the offense, well, then he can be running back two next year because DiMercato's on a one-year deal. And then by year three, maybe he's running back one, and they don't have to pay Ken Walker anymore.
I'm not disagreeing with you or anybody on the text line. Do I think who is the better running back for the Chiefs, Amari DiMercato or Emmett Johnson, as in with the football in his hands? It's not even close.
Yes, Emmett Johnson. 100%.
It's Emmett Johnson. We're not disagreeing on that at all. Absolutely, Emmett Johnson should get carries before Amari DiMercato, but you also can't make it so obvious that every time Emmett Johnson is on the field, you're only handing the ball to him. We ran into this with Rashard Smith last year. It was the opposite. So that's all I'm saying. But, no, who is the running back? If you told me Kenneth Walker was out for a week, hopefully that doesn't happen, but was out for a week, who do I want running the football for this team? Yeah, Emmett Johnson's 100%. The answer. Yeah. We're on the same page there.
But I just don't. I think it'll – and DiMercato, by the way, he's been explosive when healthy in the NFL. So I don't want to make it seem like he stinks either.
Text line. Some people are mad. Some Nebraska fans are mad.
Sorry.
Again, if you listen to the reasoning behind it, someone says he should have more yards than DiMercato. I think he will by the end of the year.
I don't think he will.
You said he's going to have less than Rashard Smith by the end of the year.
Total yards? Not rushing, right? Total?
Yeah.
Not kick return. I think Rashard Smith will have more. Rashard Smith had 200-something total yards last year.
I think Emmett Johnson has more than that.
I don't know if Emmett Johnson gets
between it. Smith and Johnson, I think Emmett Johnson will have more run.
Okay. I said total. Rushing and receiving.
I think Emmett Johnson. Emmett Johnson can catch the ball as well. That's one thing he
did well. I don't care about blocking.
Andy does. You don't have to.
For those of us that love Andy fantasy does. Football and just want to see, like, yeah, it shouldn't matter, but that's not.
If
that,
Kenneth
that
Walker, for whatever reason, knock on wood for you Chiefs fans, got hurt, Emmett Johnson should actually be picked up if he's available in your fantasy football league.
Of course.
1,000%.
Of course. All right, guys. Up next, let's get to what's trending. We also will let you guys hear our conversation with Danen Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver. He, of course, is part of the Chiefs Radio Network. We asked him about Cyrus Allen, about how Patrick Mahomes looks as well right here in St. Joe.
What's trending?
Cheddar, mozzarella, Havarti.
Number one on what's trending. Well, at practice today, that meant Jalen Moore was once again at left tackle. They had Hunter Norzad playing right guard and then Khalil Benson, the undrafted rookie, at right tackle. Ashton Gelati did not practice today. Now, on a positive side of things injury-wise, Tyquan Thornton did practice in full pads today after leaving yesterday with a hamstring strain. So that was a positive. And then the Chiefs did sign former Chief Cam Jones to the roster today. He spent last season with the Jets. He was part of Chiefs when they won the Super Bowl, first two seasons that he had in Kansas City. And he's someone that we think will be more of a special teams guy, but they need some more depth with the linebacking room with some of the injuries, too.
Next up on What's Trending, the Royals winners in walk-off fashion last night. Bobby Wood Jr. gets the game when he hit Tyler Tolbert. Tied it up before that. Daniel Lynch gave him four innings of one-run ball in his third, I think, start in since returning to the starting rotation. Maybe fourth, but right around there in the early end. Either way, the Royals did win last night. Obviously, their season has gone wayward, but still, like, walk-offs are fun no matter how the season's going, you know? Good time last night had.
I was very happy about that walk-off, Cody.
I know. Won you a big parlay, right?
Well, it was the final leg of a very nice parlay. Carrington was texting me, telling me at our outing last night, and then I texted him after. He wanted me to cash out. He kept saying to cash out. I said, I'm not cashing out. I said, I'm not cashing out on this bet. I'm playing the Oakland Athletics or whatever the hell they're called.
Their bullpen stinks.
Yep. Yep, I'm glad I didn't cash out. I would have been so mad.
Yeah, you got...
I would have been furious. The cash out offer was a joke, too.
Oh, not a good enough one?
Yeah.
Profit, but not a good enough profit.
Yeah, it would have been double the money, but this was a six-leg parlay to win quite more than double the money.
Sure, sure.
So, yes. Thank you, Tyler Tolbert. Thank you, Bobby Witt.
Thank you, A's Bullpen.
Thank you, A's Bullpen. Yeah, that's for sure. All right, NFL injury news today. Saints running back Alvin Kamara expected to miss at least a month with a MCL sprain. Jaden Higgins, wide receiver for the Texans, done for the year with a torn ACL.
Ugh.
The Chargers center Tyler Biadasz is out indefinitely after suffering damage to his ACL, plus some other injuries to go with it all around that knee. So some big-time injuries in the AFC, at least with the Saints and Alvin. He'll be back this year. The other guys are not coming back.
No, not good at all for them. Next up on Watch Trending, tennis star Nick Kyrgios provisionally banned from the sport of tennis after he tested positive for cocaine. He was very honest in his press conference addressing the thing, saying he did make a mistake. He's going to be suspended, obviously, for some time. He's already 31 years old. The Australian had a checkered disciplinary record with the ATP Tour anyway, so we'll see what happens. Said he could face a ban of up to 4 years.
Oh, he's done.
Though lighter sanctions are or can be expected based on that, but it is considered a doping substance, according to tennis.
Other NFL news today, the Seahawks reportedly are signing ex-Cowboys corner Trevon Diggs.
Why?
To help out their secondary. Just a one-year deal.
Right.
Two-time Pro Bowl corner. He's obviously not played anywhere near that level the last couple of years. He turns 28. He's still only 28 years old. He turns 28 next month. And it's basically taking a flyer, right? Like, they're just taking a flyer to see if there's something there. But he definitely has not been the same player the last couple of seasons. He joins an impressive defensive unit.
Well, they must not like their secondary because they're willing to take a chance who has 8 felony charges pending against him.
They are desperate.
And Trevon Diggs. So they don't like their cornerback room. That's all I can safely say.
They are definitely desperate. That is for sure. Our training camp coverage here in St. Joe is presented by Yingling Flight. Football season starts here. Reach for Yingling Flight, the next generation of light beer. Enjoy responsibly. Right after practice today, former Chiefs wide receiver Danon Hughes stopped by. He, of course, is part of the Chiefs radio network. He'll be on the broadcast with Mitch Holthus and Josh Klingler Saturday in Tampa when the Chiefs have their second preseason game of the year right here on 96.5 The Fan. At this point in camp, we wanted to see what a former player would think players are going through at this point in time, knowing that they're done with padded practices at St. Joe.
They're feeling like they can finally exhale. You got one preseason game in your pocket. You are now about to break camp. You're going to go on the road. You kind of get the experience of, especially the rookies, okay, what does a road game look like? I remember what it looks like in college, but what does it look like at the pro level? And, you know, from getting on the buses to having your assigned seats on the plane to the plane food, all of the things that maybe – the general fan doesn't take into consideration that factors into the product that you put on the field, the hotel setup, your roommates, if you have roommates, who doesn't have roommates. So a lot of that comes into play. And then also the feeling of being able to break camp. And if you have family or a spouse or what have you, kids that are back in Kansas City, that you'll actually get to see them for a little bit before jettisoning off to Tampa Bay. So, it's a cool experience. The fact that they're having this cool weather,
yeah,
you know, is awesome, and I know that's what they relish too.
When you look at, like, the roster overall, how are you feeling about their position this year versus last year? And I guess how much of last year do you look back and say it was a talent issue,
yeah,
or an execution issue or some combination? You know, like, how do you view last year's problems? You know, was it just they didn't have enough guys?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture. I think it's always a mixture of talent and execution. You consider the year before when we were trying to go for that three-peat in Super Bowl runs, we were 12-0 between regular season and postseason, 12-0 in one-score games. Last year, I believe we were 1-8. So that's the difference between – it's such a small window of difference between being a great team or being a strongly competitive playoff team and being a team that's 6-11 and sent home in the second week of January. So I feel like the execution part is in part of that, but then there was also some personnel and players just not making plays. And I've said it throughout the offseason, being 6-11 was better than being 9-8 or 10-7, because you can't, what do they say, put lipstick on a pig?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, you know, it forces you
to. The pig is 6-11, right? And you can't pretty that up. And if you have any kind of competitive juices in your body as a player, as a coach, as a front office for the Chiefs, you look at that and you're sick, especially with where we were coming from. And I don't know if you would have that same kind of sick feeling if you were 10-7 and just barely missed the playoffs or lost in the wild card round. So I feel like there's a chip on the shoulder of guys. There are, whether it's off the field stuff, whether it's back from injury, whether it's age, whether it's lack of top shelf production last year. Several of these guys that will represent the Chiefs on Monday Night Football against the Broncos have something to prove. And I like having that kind of aura around this team.
We got Dane and Hughes joining us here on 96.5 The Fan. I can't have Yana not ask about these wide receivers. And Cyrus Allen, I feel like every single day we've been here, there's a moment that catches your attention. I'm sure you saw the one-on-one catch against Mansoor Delane. What do you see from him right now?
So what I see is extreme confidence, and I really like that. And one of the things, you know, obviously being a former wide receiver and being in the booth with Chiefs Radio Network now 7 years, my eyes always gravitate to the wide receivers. That's my position. What they're doing right, what they're not doing so right. And one thing that I thought was kind of a detriment to that group is winning your basic 9 routes on the outside of the numbers. Can you line up and be on the outside of the numbers going against a DB and bump and run or off coverage and run an out, run a hitch, run a comeback, run a dig, run a post, run a go, all of the curl route, all of the basic fundamental route tree that you have as a receiver? And I don't think we really were as good as we need to be at the NFL level last year in doing that. Now, how you counter that is having who I call the mad scientist of offense and Andy Reid scheming you up. Because if you can't win outside, let's scheme you up with pick routes and crossing routes and all of these different intricate game plans, and we'll get you the ball that way. There's only but so much of that you can do. And I feel like Cyrus Allen, to me, brings a different nuance of route running that I don't think we've seen from a lot of the guys in recent times.
It might just be, it's social media clips, so I'll take your word for more. Mm-hmm. Is release a big part of that? That seems to be the thing that everybody is complimenting him the most on, mm-hmm. is the ability to just get off the line. That first move, that's what makes guys like Puka Nacua or other guys great, is their ability to just get free. You don't have to be the fastest or tallest guy. Can you get loose?
You got to be able to create separation. Now, you can be a big receiver like Courtland Sutton, running into a guy or pushing off at the last moment. We see that from George Pickens and the bigger receivers. But if you're not going to have that size and the ability to create separation down the field, you got to be able to be short and quick and be able to create separation at the line of scrimmage. And that's what I see from Cyrus. I think he has done a phenomenal job in garnering the attention and the confidence of Patrick Mahomes. And I think that's huge as a wide receiver.
Rashee Rice, I know – again, social media is one thing. People are making a big deal the first couple days of practice. They thought he looked maybe like he was overweight or whatever. Was it just maybe not being in football shape initially? What are you seeing from Rashee Rice out there? Do you think he's caught up now?
I think he's caught up now, and it doesn't take much. When you're an elite athlete like he is and you go through the rehab process and off-the-field issues, you're not going to be in top shape coming to training camp. Heck, back in the day, the players used training camp to get in shape. They came in overweight, and I had teammates that would come in overweight, and by the end of training camp, they were, specimens. So I don't put a lot of stock in it. I think he recognizes what it takes to be a pro on the field. And if there's no one else on this team that has to prove something this year, it is Rashee Rice. And if I had mentioned about – I had done a speaking engagement talking about – his mindset and how you bounce back from some of the issues you've had off the field. And to me, as a parent, as a guy that used to coach, as a guy that's been coachable throughout his career, you come to a situation where you look in the mirror and you say, okay, like, is it enough? is the distractions and the issues and the money I've had to spend and all of the different things, is that enough? And how can I get back to being a top elite wide receiver? And I feel like this is the time now. So there's nothing that tells me different right now, and time will tell, but I like what I see from him as well. He had a couple of drops today in traffic, which I think that's a part of his game that he needs to be better at. We can go back to games last year where we literally lost momentum because of key drops in traffic. So he's got to be better at that.
Patrick looked the same to you?
Oh, yeah.
He's been dialed in for a couple of these.
I love watching him move to the left.
Yesterday when he just stopped and then ripped one?
Yeah, move to the left, flip your hips. He's throwing across the grain, touch passes over the heads of linebackers in front of safeties. Had the one-handed catch by Travis Kelce in the red zone earlier in practice. So it shows you that he still has that ability to find the short windows and trust his receivers and tight ends and running backs. I don't know if you guys have heard anything, if he's going to play a little bit this week.
I'm hoping no, with no Joshua Simmons and no Trey Smith. I don't know why.
I don't think we're going to see
Andy
him at all.
Andy won't give the story until tomorrow. He has hinted at the idea that maybe the third preseason game, I think, is the read between the lines. But unless the offensive line's healthy, it might just be the first time I don't make him throw a pass before the season starts.
Yeah, the only thing that concerns me about that is the rust factor, but then also you're going to throw him to the wolves, literally Nick Bonito, yep, and that pass rush for the Denver Broncos on Monday Night Football, and that'd be the first time he's ever touched. So, again, I don't want him to get touched in the preseason. I'd rather him come in for a series and we run three plays and he darts out. Maybe he runs a screen pass where he doesn't get touched. But to think about the first time you're going to be tackled or hit or pushed around or anything is against the Broncos, that is something that concerns me.
Dane and Hughes, part of the Chiefs Radio Network, color analysts, along there with Mitch Holthus and Josh Klingler. They'll be on the broadcast this Saturday down in Tampa. We were looking at the weather last night. Might need your poncho. Well, I guess you won't need the poncho. You're in the
booth. Josh will.
Kling might need the poncho. Yeah, Kling might need the poncho. Dane and
Greg. Oh, darn it.
So that was Dane and Hughes with us earlier today. He was up at practice, and again, he will be in Tampa on Saturday with the Chiefs Radio Network here on 96.5 The Fan. We asked about Cyrus Allen there at the beginning, and if you're just tuning in, we did have our final
stunning
Camp Darling Island Elimination Day, and no surprise, the official 2026 Camp Darling is none other than wide receiver Cyrus Allen. He, of course, was going to be Camp Darling Island. The final two came down to him and Khalil Benson. I also think that was pretty obvious. Final three included Emmett Johnson, but Cyrus Allen, it has to be the clear winner this year for Camp Darling Island. Every single day, there was something to discuss about Cyrus. He also, today, once again, made a great catch on Mansoor Delane. How many times have we said that? Not necessarily on Delane, but how many times
just in general.
And then in the preseason game, yeah, it was 2 for 20. Okay, we can calm down. But also on the tunnel screen, it got called back. You saw the burst. He also, on the catch, went up and climbed the ladder, made an impressive grab. He's done everything you would want from a camp darling.
Correct. And look, Emmett Johnson, maybe he'd had a chance in a world in which they don't sign Ken Walker, and he was competing to be the lead back, you know. Maybe that version of it certainly could be at least plausible. But I just think as you look at it, he was the obvious choice. It was really, I don't know if it wasn't day one, because when we drafted, we didn't all know it was going to be Cyrus Allen, no question, no arguments. But by the time we got maybe 2 days into it, we knew.
Right.
And it did not take long.
Somebody even asked, they go, hey, what's the history on Camp Darling Island? Is there some curse or anything? What have they done?
No.
This is only year two. But no,
last year it was Tyquan Thornton,
I would say. Camp Darling worked out pretty well. He had a nice season. In fact, should have played more. And now he's back on a 2-year deal. So I think the track record so far is good. Now this has a chance to be the biggest return on quote unquote investment for Camp Darling Island ever.
Yes,
if Cyrus does what people are hoping he does this year and long term. But no, I think it's only year two. We're planning on bringing it back next year for 2027. There'll be some names we don't even know exist right now.
Correct.
That might be Camp Darling Island next year.
Some names.
That's the point, usually.
Yeah, some names find their way back onto the list. Like, you got to go back to, like, the Luis Rhys-Zamet year and some of these other guys who might have won, Trey Smith. The last 2 years have been a little more of a layup, but that's okay.
The only guys that were on the island this year that I think should be – that were on the island that are eligible again for next year if things sort out. Benson could be a candidate again.
I think so. Emmitt Johnson
maybe could be a candidate again.
Yeah.
I don't think Garrett Nussmeier is just tough, right? It's just
he could be on the list, but it'd be hard for him to win it.
Yeah, right, right.
Other than that, like I don't think
not R. Mason.
It'll be year two of a second round pick. R. Mason Thomas won't be eligible.
And so, if they have a really good year this year, they're gonna get kicked off the island anyway.
And we'll have whoever the first second-round picks are next year to talk
anytime
about.
After second. Yep. We don't let first-round picks on the island.
That's true. Thanks to Drew for the last couple of weeks as well producing. It's always trickier when we're on remote, so there's a lot more stuff for him to do when that happens. So appreciate that. We're back in studio tomorrow. Full show. Crew, I should say. Not a full show. Full crew. Royals do have a day game. But it's a full crew tomorrow. We will be back on video as well, and we will not have to have our figurines taking our place anymore. No. The Drive is up next here at 96.5 The Fan.